When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is time for our weekly listener mail segment. We're going a lot of places here, folks. First off, as we said earlier this week, we want to thank everybody who is able to meet us in Atlanta for our book launch. It was so cool to meet in person several people that at least I have been talking to for years at this point over social media or email or so on. Just, you know, there's an importance with putting yourself in the physical presence of people who become close friends, I would say. We're going to hear from some of our fellow conspiracy realists. We're going to learn about the ins and outs of competitive phishing. And I won't spoil that, but we'll get some terminology in there. We're going to learn about some firsthand experience from a law enforcement officer with the ShotSpotter system, which is going to be the subject of an upcoming episode in the near future. And before we do that, we wanted to ease into this week's segment with a wonderful letter that is, I would say, revelatory, coming from someone calling themselves Sparkles the Tooth Fairy. So Sparkles, if you hear this, big, big fan. A lot of people, you know, I can always tell when we do an episode that resonates with a lot of people, because a lot of our fellow listeners will hit me up on like Twitter, Ben Bolin HSW, or Instagram, Ben Bolin in a burst of creativity, and just give us this inside look at something that we might be very unfamiliar with. And that's what Sparkles did. So I think we were all three of us, and many of us listening, were surprised that the glitter episode is proof that almost any imaginable thing might have some secrets lurking deep in the story. Glitter is no different. Quick recap before we get into this letter. What we found in our episode is that the two biggest glitter manufacturers in the United States, who are both in New Jersey, are named GlitterX and Meadowbrook, and they are incredibly cartoonishly secretive about their customer base. They will tell you, it is common knowledge, that there is one industry or one genre of industry that is by far the largest consumer of glitter in the U.S., but they will not, these companies will absolutely not reveal who that is. We received a lot of correspondence to this in the show. A lot of people were writing to me about this. And I think what was beautiful is we're all kind of collaborating together to figure this out. I want to shout out one place in particular, the podcast Endless Thread. Have you guys heard of Endless Thread? It's a great show.
No, I like the name though.
Tell us more.
Good. So Endless Thread did an episode on the glitter mystery as well. What is it that Big Glitter doesn't want us to know? And several of our listeners had forwarded this to me, and I had listened to it in doing some research for our glitter episode. But I say this with absolute affection. Endless Thread is an awesome show. But I just, in this case, happened to not be 100% persuaded that they had found the answer. If you are okay with spoilers, give you a spoiler warning, 3, 2, 1. Their episode ends concluding that this is the main genre of industry for glitter is boat paint. And they make an okay case for it. Honestly, again, they do very good work. I personally wasn't persuaded. And I get the feeling, Matt, Noel, that none of us were persuaded in our own episode that boat paint could be the answer. Is that on base?
Did we even boat talk about boat
or
paint?
Candy paint, you know, for like kind of hot rods and stuff, that sparkly kind of, you know, the kind of things you see on bumper cars at amusement parks.
We did talk about boat paint pretty briefly because we got more, I think we got deeper into the idea of micro taggants and commercial and military explosives. But with that being said, Endless Thread, they felt pretty secure in saying that they thought the primary consumer of glitter, the big conspiracy of glitter, was that they were selling boat paint. And there are some good arguments for that. There's some good evidence, like the idea that, you know, any watercraft, any maritime craft is absolutely brutal when it comes to maintenance. And so maybe there are huge cruise ships that have to constantly be repainted or apply new paint for wear and tear. And maybe that stuff's leaching in the ocean and they would rather families not think about that when they're going on a cruise. Like, that's understandable. But sparkles, guys, Sparkles the Tooth Fairy gave us something much, I don't know. Let me just read this. We'll see what we think. We'll stop anytime along the way. All right. Hey, guys. So I work in regulatory and have worked for a government contractor company and can give you some insight into how glitter was making its way into their hands. Number one, the government and military are the majority of consumers. Military planes, ships, drones, weapons, tents, and building covers. They all purchase specific and patented glitter to mix into their paints for counterintelligence. They have developed certain glitters that, when suspended in a paint or coating, form specific chains to either scramble receivers, trackers, and satellites, or entirely disappear in the sky from photographs. Whoa. By blending into their surroundings. Some form specific chains and will also form mirror-like properties to evade other governments. It's wild.
Well, what do you think? Just answered our question. Maybe not explosives, but that is fabulous. It reminds me of a dazzle camo, like an old school kind of way of ships, like destroyers. They're kind of painted with these like zebra stripe kind of things that were sort of like not fully aligned. And it was just a very analog cloaking device, essentially. Like, they essentially just blend into the horizon because of these, you know, kind of stripes. Mm-hmm. It's what zebras do.
Right. And also human beings do have stripes. They're just not as visible. Check out Stuff You Should Know, short stuff on that. I think it just came out recently, but it's wild. Yeah. This is the claim by someone who worked in regulation and also gave us some other info that we're not sharing on air.
Well, it also reminds me of like heat shimmers and the idea of mirages, you know, where mm-hmm. like certain things can reflect off of things in the desert and, you know, create these kind of like optical illusions. It's just a kind of human way of harnessing that. And it really, you know, it's very similar to the dazzle. And also, like, I imagine there would be different areas that maybe have different types of glitter. And when you combine them, they sort of create this sort of like greater than the sum of their parts effect.
Yeah. Like microbes and fungi. So in your mouth.
Just so.
Check out the strange news segment from earlier. Next point that Sparkles raises. Two, working in regulatory, I can tell you that compostable glitter is made mostly with a PLA plastic that can degrade, but is expensive and can only be used with certain colors. Plus, academia is finding out that PLA actually degrades into microplastics. Doc, can we get a womp womp? There it is. So compostable glitter may not be in the market much longer. And Sparkles has linked to some interesting information about that. Third point, this is something we talked about as well. Cosmetics and personal care use specific metallics that do not harm your skin in certain uses. Metallics and glitter used near the eye, or glitters rather, have to be a specific shape. While mica is put into eye creams and face creams to give you that glow, where it tricks you into thinking your skin is glowing when it's light reflecting. So we've got confirmation about glitter and makeup, which I think that was pretty public knowledge too. But what about this next one? This is a doozy. Number four, mica is also approved to be put into food and is often found used as a whitener to make bread appear brighter. It is in so many foods you would never think of. Pasta, cheese, bread, cookies, marshmallows, etc.
And mica is that silvery kind of almost shell-like looking stuff that you see occurring naturally in sediments and rocks, right?
Yeah, that kind of got to me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not an expert on bread, but I like it without, you know, mica in it. But anyway, Sparkles ends on saying, five, all that shimmers isn't always gold. Best, Sparkles the Tooth Fairy. So what do you guys think? This sounds like someone who is speaking with insider information.
Yes, we were definitely locking into the whole proprietary angle of it in terms of the explosives. In terms of using it to track explosives, I think this seems a little less far-fetched, and the proprietary thing still holds true because, you know, these combinations, I mean, it's sort of like having a very specific mix of colors to make a proprietary paint that you can copyright or trademark, or like a glaze if you're a potter or something. A lot of potters' bread and butter is literally having a very unique combination of materials that creates a certain glaze that anyone can't just copy because they won't make it, you know, public. This really rings true to me.
I think this whole message is a cipher.
Ah.
I think all we need to know about this message and what this person is trying to say is in the name.
Ah, okay. A dentifrice of some sort, yes?
Yes. It's something with a tooth fairy, something that sparkles. This is a secret-coded message, guys.
You know what? I will play your reindeer games, or these dental games in this case. There's a lot. I know there's a lot of material science that goes into dentistry. And I guess, you know, what we could do is if we did some quick cocktail napkin math, then all we would need to do is get the current population of the United States and then multiply that by the average number of teeth that people have and then account for, you know, people who can regularly see a dentist. I think I'm going in the wrong rabbit hole. I think I'm in the wrong rabbit hole, guys. But I like the idea. It's just so weird. I mean, I got so many responses, people reaching out directly with their guesses. And I just don't feel like, I feel like there are really good points to the boat paint or the boating industry paint argument, but I, the military spends so much money and it's so huge and it would also need boat paint. So I don't know. I'm more persuaded by sparkles, unless, as you said, Matt, it is a cipher and the real message is to watch out for sparkly teeth.
Yeah, man.
So it sounds like we're persuaded here. Want to hear your take, folks, especially if you, like sparkles, are able to confirm your firsthand familiarity with this sort of stuff. And also, I would love it. Write to the show, or you can always, you know, hit me up directly on social media. Let us know what other seemingly wholesome industries, they have a dark side about them, a cover up, a bit of stuff they don't want you to know. While you're thinking through that, why not join us for a break for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more messages from you.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
And we're back. And I think we've all been super fascinated by both the chess cheating scandal, which I did see, Ben, you pointed out there was a paper or like a PDF that was released that was quite in depth analyzing that this guy, Hans Niemann, this chess master, in question has likely cheated in online matches more than 100 times. So that was interesting. But I did get a direct message on Instagram from someone who would like to be referred to as Curball, giving us a little bit more details surrounding the phishing scandal that we recently discussed, where a two-person team was discovered to have been loading their fish with weights and pre-cut or store-bought fish fillets. With that one just keeps cracking me up. Because it's like, what did they think was going to happen? Like, why does it even have to be fish fillets? Like, if someone was going to open it up and be like, oh, it's the same thing. It's the same material. It's fine. And then pairing them with the weights, it's just comical. But had a couple of really interesting points from Curball. The first of which is that a referee, I think I asked this question in the segment, at a fishing tournament is a weighmaster. So that's literally the person that's like, you know, assigning the official results by weighing the hulls. And then we mentioned the idea of polygraph tests being used in phishing. And I think I was a little bit broad. I don't think I fully understood how that was integrated into the proceedings. And we got some really good detail around that and several other things. So Curball writes, cheating at tournaments is more common than the general public is aware of. My dad is a pro king mackerel tournament fisherman. I won junior angler of the year on the circuit more than anyone else last I checked. Polygraphs are only done when someone protests the win. The most common thing people do to cheat is take bait fish and make it look like it's been chewed up, then shove it down the throat and use something to push it down. It can be done when the fish is still partially alive and it will start to digest it if it doesn't throw it up. Ew. We didn't cheat when I fished with my dad, but it definitely happens. Putting weights in a fish is not smart, as usually the fish are gutted after weighing, or at the very least, all the fish are sold or donated to local charities and will be filleted. So the cheater will be discovered. Also, those weights are standard weights used on fishing rigs, commonly referred to as an egg sinker. All of that stuff makes sense, but it really calls into question how these guys got away with it for so long. And if they had gotten away with it for so long to the point where it made them kind of comfortable, and then they maybe just like pushed it to the next level with adding the weights in, because it's a good point. Like, something's going to happen to the fish. Do they give them back to you? If it's out of your hands, eventually someone's going to go digging around in there and find things that don't belong. But obviously this didn't happen for some time, because these two folks that we're talking about, whose names are escaping me at the moment, had won many of these types of tournaments and hauled in quite a lot of fish and a lot of prize money. I think it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, their claim was that this was the first time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is their claim, but that's the problem, right? I mean, it's the same thing with the chess cheating, where when someone is discovered, it calls into question everything they've done in the past. And if you go back and look for patterns like they did with the chess cheating, you start to find them. It's when you're caught the first time. It's usually not the first time. It's usually after you've kind of gotten a little bit sloppy.
Right. That's a hard thing to maintain. You know what I mean? It's like if you were a cop and you pulled someone over for speeding, and they said, I'm sorry, got me. It's my first time speeding, even though I've driven a car for years. You would need some extra proof. Like, I would file this claim of not cheating or cheating only once and getting caught. I would file it under extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. You'd have to go Absolutely. Back through and prove everything. I would say, Curball, one thing that's been on my mind here since we originally covered that story is whether or not it's possible that these guys knew the Waymasters in previous competitions. Would it be possible for there to be collusion between the authorities and the competitors? I don't know. It's interesting because I don't know if that's a question we asked last time we talked about this. What do you guys think?
We did not.
That wouldn't make sense.
It's certainly a reasonable question to ask, since, you know, again, wherever there's money, there are deals to be cut. And if someone's a sure thing, chances are they've got some in with the waymaster or the referee or whatever who are getting cut in. But I can't imagine that it would be the same person every time. So it'd be pretty hard to know who it's going to be. But maybe I'm wrong. Curveball, let us know. In these types of tournaments that are in the same, you know, parts of the state, is it going to be the same person that's weighing the fish every time? And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if any collusion is uncovered, because obviously now there is an investigation. And once people start sniffing around, you know, these kinds of connections start to reveal themselves.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is the thing. Okay, this is going to sound like a weird story. So one of my old grade school friends had, I guess, one of those sudden changes in life situations, and he relocated to Colorado, where he is a professional fisherman. I think a professional, like competitive fisherman, and travels around doing this. And I actually wrote to him to ask about this. So I'm going to be talking with him, I think, later over the weekend. Well, you have to understand, present company excluded, the vast majority of my friends are very, very strange people. So I will send you guys.
Hey, we're strange people. Being strange is cool.
You don't want to be excluded. Okay. Then you guys are on board too. What I'll do is on our group chat, I will just, I'll drop you guys a line before, not a fish joke. I'll drop you guys a line before we meet, and then we'll like buddy system it. And if you don't hear from me, seek the fisherman. But it is, the cool thing is, this is such an uber competitive thing. And I know I can't speak for everybody on the show, but I know I was definitely not super aware of almost anything. Like, I know how to fish. I have fished, but I have no idea how competitive fishing works. What about you guys?
Well, my buddy Nick is a competitive fisher up in Augusta, or over in Augusta. Is it over in Augusta?
Down in Augusta.
Down in Augusta. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, I know a little bit from him, and it seems super, super cool. A lot of the, he would correct me, and I would probably be wrong. I thought that some of the tournaments were catch and release. So you catch a fish, get it weighed, and then you release it, or you self-report in some of them. I don't know how it functions. Never mind. I don't know anything.
No, wait.
Come on. No.
Let's go with this, because I've got an idea. Let's just extend some empathy to what if there is one fish that has been continually caught in annual catch and release competitions, and it is somehow just accepted that it is abducted once a year, right? Maybe that's what's happening with UFO abductees. People feel like they've been abducted multiple times. Maybe it's like a competitive fishing thing for extraterrestrials. I think I'm solving the wrong problem here. Sorry.
You're right, Matt. It depends on the area or the state laws, you know, and the DNR or whatever. But in Georgia, it does appear that most bass tournaments anyway are catch and release. And I've got a friend who lives in Savannah who fishes a lot, and I'm always confused when he's like showing off fish that he caught, and then he's releasing them, but then sometimes he keeps them. I think when you have a fishing license, you're supposed to report how many you keep or something, and if you catch and release them, then that doesn't enter into your quota, perhaps. I'm not sure. I mean, surely overfishing is something to be considered. So you can't just fish willy nilly and just keep them all. I would think there would be some rules around that.
My son wants to start fishing, which is really exciting to me. Yeah. And I've never caught a fish before in my life. So
you're going to
see what happens.
You're going to have fun when you catch your first fish. And you can totally do the catch and release thing. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I would say for children, learning to fish is like a great way to explore quiet focus. That's definitely something that can be, at least it was challenging to me those many moons ago when I was learning to fish. I was like, does this just mean you sit by your dad's friends as they drink in silence on a boat? That's what I understood.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll just be me getting drunk on a boat and my son just there being quiet.
Don't get too drunk, though.
Sounds exciting.
You got to pilot the boat back to shore.
Gotta get back.
You know, you don't want to be marooned.
Yeah. I'm only joking. I would never do that.
No, I know. But my uncle is an outdoorsman, and I went fishing with him once when I was like probably 7. And there's a picture of me holding a tiny little fish that I caught. And it's very, very pathetic. But I do remember that. And I remember at the time, even he had all the newest bells and whistles and, like, you know, things that could almost like GPS type things that could, you know, plumb the depths on a little screen and kind of show you little bogeys and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Those things are cool.
So cool.
Well, this one could be a quick one because we are still waiting for kind of updates on the story. But thank you, Kerbal, for the inside scoop on fishing and in tournaments. And the polygraph thing is very interesting. That makes sense that it would only be instituted if there was someone protested.
Yeah,
you know,
agreed.
The weight. But then, I've been talking about this a lot with friends, and I was at a party the other night, and this came up. I overheard some people talking about the fishing things. I literally heard someone say, "We got weights." They were quoting the video, you know, where people were like losing their mind, and like it was almost like a lynch mob was assembling. But the question came up, what do you ask them in the polygraph? Like, just is it just as simple as like, did you cheat? Or like, what do you think, Ben, knowing what you know about the procedure, again, highly fallible procedure of polygraphs, what kind of line of questioning do you think a protested fishing situation would require?
Oh, yeah, let's crowdsource this. So let's think tank it. So there are a lot of hilarious answers, but the first thing is, yes, I'm really glad you pointed out polygraphs are at best an assessment tool. And at worst, they're junk science. So what you would want to do if you're administering it in a legit way, is you want to ask what are called baseline questions. And that'll show you what a person's natural state is, you know, like their heart rate, other signals, and so on. So you would ask them stuff that everybody in the conversation already knows the answer to. What's your name, right? Is it true you live at blah, 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 blah? And then you would start amplifying that a little bit. Once you've got the baseline, then you would start asking them things that they would have to confirm to be untrue, right? Like you would say, is it true that you're from New York? And they might say, no, I'm from Kentucky. And then you see how they react to that kind of stuff. So once you have, this is my understanding of this. I'm not a professional polygraph administrator. If you are in the audience, please write to us. We'd love to hear your experience. But after that, I think after you somehow establish that baseline, you move to those questions that might be cheating. So you want to see how they react to stuff like, how much did each fish you caught weigh? Like each fish you caught today? Well, how many fish did you catch? Right. And then you start. It's similar to an interrogation. You ask the same question phrased different ways and see if they trip up. Does that make sense? We could try it. We could polygraph each other.
No, it totally makes sense. I mean, and that's, you know, I knew the answer would probably be pretty unremarkable. You have the baseline, obviously, is very important. And then it would just have to be something very specific. You know, no one's going to know exactly what their fish are going to weigh. So it'd have to be something like, did you stuff your fish, or did you throw these fish in, did you use cheat bait or whatever it might be. I always remember the episode of King of the Hill where Hank Hill, you know, accidentally was using crack as fish bait, and then he was super, you know, it was very successful, and then he ended up having to I think he ended up getting caught with crack. And then he had to appear before a judge, and then he had to convince the judge that he was actually believed that he was using it for bait. And then in order to do that, the judge, being one of those kind of outside the box judge thinkers, he took him out on the boat and showed him that it worked. And that's then he's like, okay, I believe.
Oh, Mr. Show has one of the best polygraph sketches too. Those guys are great. That's a fun one. You know what, Noel, maybe a good question to ask would be, how much did the fish weigh when you caught it? How much would you guess? And then they would, like, I don't know, that you don't want to ask people to guess stuff that goes against it. I don't know. It's just, it's a way to mess with people. But
how about, are you a lying son of a gun? You know, that could be a good one.
How many weights do you usually put in fish? How many did you put in today? Right.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, a lot of these tournaments take place in kind of rural parts of the country. Like, where do you get you a professional polygraph person, you know, on demand?
You'd be surprised. I mean, and also,
yeah, probably.
Do they just, are they just calling them? Are they a self-appointed polygraph expert? Is it just like Dwayne's got a polygraph? Someone called Dwayne. Get him up here.
Yeah. That's a new thing. This is going to happen. We need this. This is like, I'm going to start a business. We're hiring. We're going to do polygraph tests at fishing tournaments all across the country. Let's do it.
Yeah. Traveling kind of, you know, salesman style. I like that. Well, let's throw this one back. Release this one into the wild for now and take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor and then come back with one more piece of listener mail.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
And we're back. We're going to jump to some correspondence we've received after we discussed ShotSpotter, the exciting law enforcement technology that puts microphones all across a city and then pinpoints gunshots, really, within a square mile, a certain square mile of a city. It's on a per square mile basis. That's how you buy ShotSpotter tech and get it installed and get it working. So let's jump right into it. We've got a fairly lengthy email from someone who has some experience with the technology. And I'm going to start going through this and then we can just stop me when we want to talk about it. Otherwise, I'm just going to barrel through it because it is pretty long. Okay, here we go. Greetings, gentle beings. I just finished listening to your listener mail segment on ShotSpotter, and I thought I would
give a little feedback, and perhaps a channel for potential questions I may be able to field as an end user of this system. I am a law enforcement officer in New York State, and the city in which I work has recently joined ShotSpotter. For the purposes of this correspondence, law enforcement officer will refer to road patrol level law enforcement, the basic street cop, which is where all my experience is, as it would be naive to pretend the systems used by street cops don't potentially have functions not known to us, but may be known by the top level or by the source company. For the roughly 6 years I've been working with ShotSpotter directly, it is far less scary from a privacy perspective as far as law enforcement officer handling goes. Obviously, I cannot speak to the company's integrity and handling of the recording data because that is outside my scope. In our city, somewhere in New York State, ShotSpotter was installed only in areas in which gun violence was already prevalent and does not have citywide coverage. As a matter of transparency and honesty, the, quote, map lines for the coverage do not follow apparent racial divides within the city directly, though the higher wealth areas of the city mostly do not have coverage, but also have a far lower prevalence of gun violence. Obviously, a whole separate issue in and of itself.
I mean, that's super reasonable. It makes sense because they're not going to have an infinite budget. And as we talked about in our book launch earlier, it's pretty expensive to institute this. So I guess it's not surprising, right, that there would not be citywide coverage. You'd need to sort of triage and prioritize stuff.
Yeah, just as a reminder, it is $10,000 per square mile to install the technology, all the microphones, and then it is upwards of $60,000 per year after that to run the system. And again,
that's
per square mile.
Do you know what kind of microphones they are, Matt?
I do not know.
Are they like parabolic type microphones, like that pick up things far away? Or the idea of an array is interesting. So I would imagine they're maybe in a cluster of 360 degrees.
I don't know specifically. I just know that they are dense enough within that square mile that anywhere a shot is fired, numerous microphones will pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's really just the whole point of it, as long as you can triangulate. So guys, let's jump back in here. Law enforcement officers cannot tap into microphone feeds and listen to what is going on around them. So that's a huge point. At least coming from a street level officer, they are saying that you cannot just listen into a microphone, which is, we'd have to take this law enforcement officer's word for it. But that is like good to know if it is true.
Mm-hmm.
And then the email continues, if gunfire is detected, the system autonomously alerts end users. There are web-based and app-based interfaces which law enforcement officers and dispatchers have access to. From my experiences, I have heard gunfire nearby for myself, then received the alert shortly after. The expediency of the alert lends me to believe that it is not processed or verified, at least in the immediate, by living, breathing persons. The information conveyed by the system to law enforcement officers is a longitude-latitude coordinate with a pin on a map, how many rounds were detected, a waveform of the detection, and an audio snip, which is extremely concise, very short. The benefit to the audio snip comes while en route, so I guess while you're on your way to whatever that location is as a patrol-level officer. Vetting the activation to determine if it was in fact gunfire and not fireworks or a dumpster being dropped by waste management, to determine if one labeled high capacity or automatic gunfire may be automatic or if potentially you hear multiple shooters, and if there is high caliber gunfire. Depending on the activation's proximity to the sensors, you are sometimes able to determine between a small caliber handgun or something much larger. Or if you have something distinct like a shotgun or rifle, in no way can you precisely determine, quote, okay, I'll be looking for a 9mm.
Mm.
It's more like, okay, that was a pea shooter, or, oh, that's something that can chew up my body armor.
Okay. Yes. Again, makes sense based on what we know about the technology. This all tracks to me. I don't know about you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this all makes sense. It's close to how it's described by SpotShotter in all of its documentation on its website.
It's actually very close, if not exactly the same thing. So let's continue going. Just see if there are any differences here in the personal experience. And the message continues. When the system was new to our city, the rate of activation for fireworks and dropped dumpsters, even sometimes car crashes, was relatively high. Over the last few years, it seems to have become much more accurate in separating that out, as well as improving the accuracy. Oh, here's where we get into the radius. This is important. The radius, as you mentioned, is approximately 90 feet, but is frequently within 10 to 15 feet, depending on the proximity to microphones and sources of echo nearby. The system frequently can tell if the shooter is moving, think a drive-by, and if different caliber guns are being used, and can tell if there are multiple shooters. The real perk to the system, at least from a road patrol perspective, is the expediency of alert, which cuts all the time out of someone calling into dispatch, then dispatch typing it all out, and then relaying it to us. Time matters with gunshot wounds. It's not like the movies where you get shot and pow, you're dead. I have personally started for and arrived on scene to gunshot wounds before someone on scene had finished giving the information to dispatch, which is a great aid in triaging and treating injuries. ShotSpotter is less useful for catching the shooter at the scene, though does start mobilizing available units sooner if suspect information starts being broadcast, which has led to arrests. It is important to note that in New York State, ShotSpotter as a piece of evidence holds no actionable value.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
Right.
That's really important. And we're actually going to get into that really quickly at the end here, but keep that in your mind. In New York State, ShotSpotter as a piece of evidence holds no actionable value.
Similar to like the way that a lie detector would not be considered the best evidence in some ways. But what he means by actionable is that this can't function as evidence. It functions as a tool, right? As a sensory, mm-hmm. as a sensory process to help save lives.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do like that our law enforcement officer here is putting it in the helpful for triage mostly, right? Mm-hmm. To save somebody who has been wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, recovering ballistics, at least according to ShotSpotter. So let's jump back in right here. Proximity to an activation along with other factors, but not by itself, can raise our DEBOUR level, D-E-B-O-U-R level. DEBOUR being a court case governing police-citizen interactions, in case you're not aware. Good reading with a lot of rabbit hole potential. Okay, we need to look at that, guys. D-E space B-O-U-R level. But it does not provide grounds for charges. That's what he's kind of explaining there further.
You can't say, like, we've got you on the ShotSpotter.
Yeah, exactly. No, there's no way to identify that person with that ShotSpotter audio. So let's jump back in here. As was stated in the segment, people frequently don't call police when they hear gunfire for a myriad of reasons, desensitization, fear of retaliation, etc. One such reason could be because they are dead or hiding.
Mm-hmm.
A common situation I run into is the ShotSpotter activation. No calls from citizens. On scene, we find a car or a home riddled with bullet strikes, with people hunkered down inside the house, afraid even to go get their phone. That makes sense to me.
Of course, yeah. Most people don't like being shot at. I don't think that's a hot take. And you know, also, when you go to ground like that in a firearm situation, your number one thing is going to be, if I move, if I expose myself, is it possible that whomever fired at me is still out there just waiting to get a bead on me? You know what I mean? Like, it's a terrifying thing.
And that makes the response time, the quick response time, so important, right? Because a police officer can show up. Well, then even unless you've got lights and sirens going, you may not know it's a police officer, which is also a terrifying thing. Okay, let's finish up right here, guys. In short, there are justifiable concerns with who is listening in and where legal lines are drawn with this type of technology. When you mix a private entity with proprietary technology and public sector applications, it certainly can be alarming or scary, but it isn't always nefarious. I have no knowledge of the nuts and bolts workings of this technology, but this is my end user experience with this system. If I can further clarify anything, I would be happy to give it a go.
your friendly neighborhood New York State law enforcement officer.
Yeah, that was helpful. This has been a great episode of updates and insider information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's unpack some of this. So with this last paragraph in particular, you know, I think NYSLEO, I think you're hitting on something that is the primary concern for a lot of people, a private entity with proprietary technology and public sector applications. And one thing I really like about the approach of this correspondence is it's very well structured. Here are the things I know I can speak to. Here are the things that are, as you said, outside of my scope. You may be interested to learn that a lot of the privacy concerns that are being raised regarding ShotSpotter are exactly about that, a private entity with proprietary technology. Another thing we have to point out is that ShotSpotter technology may be uniform across every area in which it's deployed, but those areas, those municipalities, towns, and cities, they might not be using it in the correct way, or, you know, there may be a bad apple somewhere in there. Does that make sense? Like, it's a corrupt small town.
It's like a point of sale thing. It's like any kind of company that, like, you know, sells things to lots of different types of businesses across the country. You have a rep and they come and they show it to you and maybe they help you install it and maybe help you if it breaks, but they're not there supervising you and making sure you're using it right. I think it's not even like OnStar or something where they've got like dispatchers that work for the company. I believe this is just another piece of kit that the law enforcement dispatchers have access to. So they could be poorly trained. They could be using it incorrectly. And there certainly could be examples of folks using it without the best intentions.
No, it's very true. Guys, I want to get into one more email that we got regarding ShotSpotter. It's really quick, I promise. I just want to give the other side of the response that we've been getting from you out there. This comes from Mr. Shadow. Mm-hmm. Says, hello, my friends, call me Mr. Shadow. I've been a longtime listener. I love the show. The ShotSpotter subject was the first one to force me to reach out. Attached below is a few Twitter threads from a lawyer who battled ShotSpotter. That company is, this is the opinion of Mr. Shadow, that company is using junk science and is almost singularly beholden to the police and their desires, lying about shots to support bad warrants, manipulating data used in prosecutions, suing individuals who speak truth about their behavior, and also, high crime areas are only ever deemed that by police, who are also the ones who measure reported crime. Please know that I love the show, but being a devil's advocate for a company of this nature is very unnecessary. Their racism and bootlicking has cost the black and brown communities lives, freedom, and privacy. Show me one ShotSpotter system in a suburb or a majority white neighborhood. I would just say, Mr. Shadow, I don't think we're necessarily being devil's advocate here. We're trying to analyze this topic as we do all other topics from every side, from every angle, and take all information into account. I hope that's what you most people hear us doing, because that's what our attempt is.
I'm really glad that we're sharing both of those messages. That's only a few of the messages we got about ShotSpotter, but look forward to the episode. We're diving into all of this, which is going to be a couple of sleepless nights in preparation, because there's a lot to do. But yeah, as you said, Matt, we are attempting to objectively explore not just the present circumstances, but also the future implications of this. There's a lot to get into here.
Yep, absolutely. I'm going to end here with how Mr. Shadow ends, who says, also investigate who pays for these policing systems in these neighborhoods and what is cut out of the budget to allow these expensive systems to be put up.
Follow the money, yes. Right?
They are a bad company doing junk science to justify over-policing in black and brown communities. People have been killed based on these false claims and have been imprisoned. And even worse, their overall accuracy rate is garbage. And I guess that's okay. Mr. Shadow out. Okay.
Well, folks, this means that we're on to something. And this is the kind of stuff that we love about the show. This is also why we are grateful to you for tuning in. So thank you to everybody who wrote to us. Thank you to everybody who's hit us up on our phone line. Thank you to everybody who swung by one way or another to contact us. Join up with us. You can be a part of the show as well. All you have to do is tell us what's on your mind. DNA modeling of suspects. What's going on with that? How do you cheat at competitive fishing or lie detector tests? You know, give us the unethical life pro tips. And then, of course, ShotSpotter. As you know, we've been going back and forth on this one for a while, and we do hope you tune into the episode. But right now, we want you to find us out there in the dark of the internet.
Yeah, it's not too hard to do. Shine a light and you will find us. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter, on Facebook, and on our YouTube channel. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show.
We've got a YouTube channel that was mentioned. You should go there and check it out. That's my song for the day, YouTube/conspiracy. It's hard to search for. You literally have to go to youtube.com/conspiracy. I can't find it when I search on Google, guys. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's going on. I find the old How Stuff Works videos in the channel. I can't find Conspiracy Stuff. I don't know what's wrong with me unless I type it right in. So do that. And also, you can call us.
The rumors are true. You can take your phone and dial a certain set of numbers, like casting a spell. The spell is 1-833-STDWYTK. If your spell is successful, you will hear a familiar voice and then a beep like so, beep, after which you will have 3 minutes. They are yours. They are magic. Go weird with it. Give yourself a nickname, a nom de plume. I'm kidding. You're writing, so it wouldn't be a nom de plume. But, you know, give yourself a cool nickname, the kind of thing you always wanted your friends to call you. And tell us if it's okay to use your name and or message on the air. Most importantly, do not censor yourself. If you have something that you need to get out in the world, as you can tell, we love in-depth correspondences. I love being able to have everything written out, to read it, to find the links. Take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We will do the rest. All you have to do is drop us a line at our good old-fashioned email address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you.
Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.